last half hour of my life, Sam, has been about the craziest that I've ever experienced as we lead up to the Penn State of Football podcast. And I hate to be late, but I'm like 37, 38 minutes now late for the podcast. So that's how crazy the last couple of minutes have been. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you? Well, it sounds like a little bit hectic, but
yeah, it's been hectic. I think my phone rang 5 times in the last 20 minutes and I had to take 3 of them because who knows what's going on. And it all turns out nothing super important going on. Just 2 people wanted to talk and 1 person wanted to return a message that I delivered earlier. But big morning with Penn State this morning. A lot of spring football talk on the Zoom conferences today. Drew Aller spoke. Sam, a lot of talk about Andy Kotelnicki the last couple of weeks. I think I want to start there as we head kind of in the general direction of blue-white game, which is on the 13th. We're 10 days away from that. I love the spring game, Sam. I love it. It's my favorite day of the year.
I think it's an underrated way to watch the team. I mean, I think that people write it off because it's a spring game and it doesn't, you know, it technically doesn't matter for records or anything like that. But it's really interesting to get a view into how the players are viewed by the coaches and what they're actually showing.
Yeah, I don't mind the game itself. I really don't. It's the whole experience around the game. I'm going to be sounding like a spoiled brat here, but I don't get my parking spot. I don't get the way into the stadium I normally get. And that stinks. I end up walking around the baseball stadium. Usually don't go anywhere near that place during a game day, but I'm walking up the hills. It usually rains. So we're always this year, I think the weather is going to be okay. So maybe it'll be a little bit better, but my favorite thing about the spring game, and I use the word favorite loosely because, you know, I forget the spring game happened usually, but I think what I kind of look at with the spring game is what do they want to show you? And that's kind of the reason I brought up Kotelnicki when I did, because I have a really daring prediction for the spring game this year, Sam. We are going to see a lot of this new offense.
Yeah.
They're going to put it on film. I think they're proud of it. I think they like the way that this is going in the spring. They're talking a lot about space. They're talking about a lot about versatility, differences that we'll see from this year to last year. And there better be a lot of them for Penn State's sake, because they have a tougher conference to get through this year. And the offense is what held them back last year. So I think we're going to see a lot of this off. And now it gets vanilla at times in the spring. They you know, in the Joe Paterno years, they used to show you exactly what they wanted to show you, which was zero. They want to just get that game over with no injuries. But I think there's a strategy here that they're going to want to show off that they're different. Maybe not necessarily to the opponents. I'm sure they'll get something out of it. But I think they want to excite the fans here. This is going to be, I think, a very different spring game. And I'll be surprised if this doesn't look good. Now, they'll make it look good if they have to. They will force good offense into this game. But I think you're going to see maybe not everything Andy Kotelnicki is going to do, but down the stretch anyway. But I think you're going to see everything that's in there right now.
I think you're right. I mean, we talked about ad nauseum, it feels like, at the end of the season and at the beginning of the offseason, how important the offensive coordinator hire was going to be with fans. And part of that is because the offense last season underwhelmed in relation to expectations. So this is the first time to really prove, like, hey, you know, if I'm James, I'm going, you know, look, I made the right decision. Look, you know, some of you didn't know who Andy Kotelnicki was coming into this spring game. This is who he is. Are you excited yet? You know what I mean? Like, it's a way to sort of, you know, preempt the rebuilding of bridges that they're going to have to do heading into this season. I think, you know, there's a lot of good on that offense that really can use an opportunity to shine. We talked about Nick Singleton sort of, you know, maybe not struggling last season, but, you know, certainly not being the, you know, the same guy he was at the Rose Bowl. And although Drew Aller had, you know, an incredible touchdown to interception ratio, people might have been underwhelmed by the lack of flash plays. The spring game is the perfect opportunity to show off some of that speed and those flashy sort of things.
Remember the spring game? Were you around when I might be wrong on this, but I think it was Dan Chisenhut caught the deep pass for the touchdown, and James ran on the field with a microphone and said, "You're on scholarship now."
I was not there. No.
Okay. So it's, yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, this guy catches, I think it was just Senna. I could be wrong, but catches this long touchdown pass. They go nuts. And I always thought, you know, what if he dropped it? Or what if the quarterback threw a different pass? And then on the way home, it occurs to me, they was never going to drop that. He was never going to throw it to a different spot. That was all staged. And I don't blame them for doing it that way. But I think you're going to see some moments here. And I don't want to say staged. They're not, obviously, you're not going to, the cornerback's not going to blow a coverage here. So, you know, Cam Miller's out there trying to win a spot too. He's not going to try to make Julian Fleming look great for the fans. So I don't think that's the case, but I think they're going to have some designs in here to make it look really good that they've made some strides in a couple of areas. And you mentioned Singleton, but I think this is a big spring game for Drew. I think Aller has to show that he's a different player. He talked a lot about his footwork today. He talked, you know, James Franklin talked about his consistency. And I think consistency and footwork go hand in hand with quarterbacks. I think when you have a quarterback whose footwork gets a little rough at times, you're going to have an inconsistent quarterback. I think that's what Aller was at times when the pressure got to him a little bit. And you saw that in some games where they got to him. I think this year he's got to show that he's a much cleaner quarterback. So I'll be very interested to see, because on the other side of the ball, you have a defensive coordinator who wants to show that there's no drop off there either. Tom Allen's going to want to look good in this game. They don't want to have any questions coming out of this game, but they have questions on both sides, really. I mean, could the offense be better? Yeah, they want to show that it can be. Will the defense be as good as it was last year? I mean, statistically, it looks unlikely, but they want to show it could be a solid difference-making defense for sure. So, and yeah, I don't know which one we're going to get in this game, which one reigns supreme, because I think there's a shot both of them could come out looking really good, but I don't know if they're going to come out. It's a delicate balance to make one look really good at the expense of the other. You know, those receivers and those cornerbacks, big matchups in this game coming up next Saturday, because you know, you look at what they have at cornerback. It's not what they've had in the past. I mean, you could say what you want about Kalen King and Johnny Dixon. I thought Johnny Dixon and Daquan Hardy, I thought Dixon and Hardy had great seasons. I thought King was a little up and down, but there were known commodities. They don't have a known commodity this time at the cornerback spot. That's all talent and potential. And they're going to want to show off what they have there with Kimber and with AJ Harris and with Miller and Zion Tracy. So I think it's going to be I don't know, maybe I don't want to say the most interesting spring game I've ever, you know, kind of recalled, because it's like saying the most interesting textbook I've ever read, but I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued by a lot of different positions that are going to be going against each other in this game. And yeah, you know, we could break down every position, and maybe we'll do that next week. But I think it'll be interesting to see how they choose to play this, whether if they stay vanilla and let the Big Ten kind of use their imaginations as we get to the fall, or if they kind of come out and say, "Here, look, here's what we got," and throw it all at the fans. And I think my gut feeling is that's what they're going to do.
I know I'm tiptoeing onto thin ice with this question, but do you think they're going to do, I could go either way. Do you think they're going to do anything crazy with Bo at this spring game?
Yes. I think they almost have to, not because, you know, just as a, "Hey, here's what we're going to do with Bo. Look, we have big plans for Bo," but if Bo's going to practice it in the game in front of fans and he has any kind of a new role. Now, I don't think you're going to see an expansive Bo package outside of the quarterback spot in this game, but I think there's going to be a time where you see Aller under center and Bo out there somewhere, or the other way around. I do, and I think that's going to be part of the offense. I don't see the point, even in a spring game, of not doing something you're going to do in a real game. I think you could show it. And let's face it, nothing they do in this game is close to what they're going to do in the fall anyway, because they have four more months to come up with stuff and learn things and do what, because this is probably half, three quarters of what Andy Kotelnicki wants to do anyway. And it evolves as it goes on in any regard. But I think if they plan to use Bo as a receiver or a running back or have him as a quarterback with Drew somewhere else, I think they're going to show that in this game. I don't know why they wouldn't. And that's, you know, again, it's kind of what the fans want to see anyway. And I can't argue it at this point, because you go back and look at those games. I mean, that was an effective package. It just was.
Absolutely. And like you said, there is some, without using the word staged, there is some element of showmanship at the spring game. It is also a marketing event to some degree. People like to see it. It sort of reminds me of the Falcon package with Levis. I know it wasn't, you know, two quarterbacks on the field for that, but people like to see athletic guys get the ball in their hand and do something crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hesitate to bring this stuff up for the reasons that we've talked about in the past about, you know, Aller is going to be their quarterback, you know, so they risk the more you put Prabula out there, the more people are going to have unrealistic expectations about how things might go. But still, like you said, if they're going to use Prabula, which they showed last year, I think they intend to, you know, I think you're in for some fireworks come the 13th.
One thing that I've heard a lot this spring, and you probably have picked up on it as well, is both sides of the ball putting the best athletes out there, however that is. Now, whether that's two quarterbacks and two receivers, or two quarterbacks and two tight ends and one receiver on offense, whether that's three safeties and two linebackers on defense, or, you know, six defensive backs or whatever it is, that's what they're trying to do. And that's the trend all around football. And I mean, that's what they're doing in the NFL. And to a certain degree, they're doing it in high schools because they have fewer players now. And they're, you know, you're not seeing a traditional 4-3-4 defense where, you know, you grew up in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. And that's what every team was running, a 3-4, a 4-3, some version of that. You're seeing everybody run different things. But I heard this morning, DeLuca, I think, said, you know, it's about getting athletes out there. It's about getting the best players. And I expect we're going to see some exotic formations too in the spring game, because, you know, they're talking a lot about Jalen Reed and that lion, quote unquote, position, and Wheatley playing more. Maybe it was Wheatley who said it. He was on the calls this morning too. But Zaki Wheatley is going to play a lot more. We talked about him a little bit last week. Obviously, Winston is going to be on the field all the time. But you have a ton of linebackers too. Some of those guys are young and good players. Tamir Robinson, Kavion Keys, Wiley is super impressive. DeLuca's really good. So there's not enough spots really anymore to play all these guys. So I think you almost have to take the blue-white game a little differently if you're a coordinator to see, you know, let's throw this out there and see what works in this package and see what works against this offense. And you could do it a little bit in tandem with the opposing coordinator to see, you know, how you look in certain spots with certain people on the field. And I think we're going to see that a little bit on the 13th, because it makes sense. I mean, you can see it to a degree in practice, and it's essentially, this is what this is. This is a giant practice, but it's a giant practice inside a stadium full of people. And if the weather is good, you're going to have a really good crowd there. So I think there's a benefit to kind of trying to run your stuff and see what's there. And, you know, I would be surprised if we see nothing out of these guys, but I think you're going to see a lot of three safeties on the field. I think you're going to see some three linebackers, because I think that's really what they want to do. And then as the season goes on, they'll go with what's working best. And look, in the past, it's been the three linebackers. They've used three linebackers pretty exclusively. So I'll be surprised if and when they go away from that on a consistent basis. But Yeah, I kind of like this idea that you're going to see Jalen Reed in a different spot. You're going to maybe see DeLuca do some different things. You're going to see a lot of Tony Rojas. You're going to see a lot of these guys. You know, what are they going to do with Robinson? What are they going to do with Keys and those guys? So around Kobe King. So I'm kind of fascinated by it, but I think there's going to be, and I don't want to use the word stage. Stage is not. I think they'll stage the play like I talked about earlier, but and hope it works. But I think there's going to be a lot of coordination, let's put it that way, to see what's this offense going to do against this look? What's this look going to do? What is this different look that we haven't shown the offense yet going to provide in a game situation? I think that's kind of, if you're looking at it from a strictly coaching perspective, I think the blue white game offers a lot, especially this one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned, I think your phrase was not enough spots for guys. And one of my favorite things to do at the blue white game is to watch the offensive line, especially when they get to the second team, third team sort of guys. And I was looking at the roster before we hopped on today, and we talked about this a little bit last season. For the first time in a while, I feel like they have too many guys for the offensive line, and I'm very interested to see, you know, who actually makes that starting five slash starting six, because they, you know, if they have a swing guard or whatever, sometimes they like to do that. But I mean, there are a lot of young offensive linemen that show a lot of talent. It reminds me of the linebackers a little bit, where there are a couple established guys in Kobe King and Tyler Elston. But then there's a lot of younger guys mixed in there who have been there for a season, you know, with Rojas and Tamir and, you know, everybody in that room. But when I look at the offensive linemen, you know, you have players like Sal Wormley coming back, and JB Nelson and Drew Shelton and Vega. These are guys that are going to factor into the equation. But then you also have some of these deeper linemen with, you know, it's the trio I sort of always go to with Javen, Donka, and Birchmeyer, who played to varying degrees last season, but, you know, certainly have talent and are looking to break into that swing role, or the competent second team. And, you know, you got guys like Cousins in there and Rulli. There are so many guys to watch at the offensive line, and sure, there are a lot of veterans in that group, but I feel like they really use the spring game to evaluate some of these players in simulated game scenarios, as you said. And it's really an opportunity to see. No defensive lineman wants to get pancaked at the spring game. You know, even if you know, they're throwing certain packages to put one side on their back feet and see how they react to pressure and whatever, nobody's laying down. It's, you know, you want to go out there and you want to compete for your position. That's what the coaches want. So it's you know, they're real reps for the trenches that I'm really excited to watch, especially, you know, that quintet of new faces.
You look in the trenches. I think always think that's the best place to watch a game, and during the season. I mean, it's the most important position on the field to me. I mean, you could talk about quarterback all you want, but if you could, teams have won with mediocre quarterbacks when they have dominant offensive and defensive line play. It doesn't guarantee you anything, but it's always a factor. I mean, how many bad teams are dominant in the trenches? But you look at it like last year, you know, Chop Robinson and Deesa Isaac. The best offensive linemen they played all year might have been the ones they saw in the spring game. I mean, it might be Olu, it might be Caden Wallace. So it's not, these aren't throwaway reps. These are, you can impress against players who might be the best players you'll see all year to a certain degree. I want to go through each position here, and we can do some of this really quickly and just kind of talk about who the spring is biggest for. Obviously, quarterback. I think we're both in agreement. This is going to be Drew, biggest spring among the quarterbacks for Drew. I mean, Grunkemeyer could go out and look good, but he's not going to be this, even the second quarterback. And we know it's, you know, Bo is not going to probably win the starting job, but he's going to do some things that are going to maybe get him on the field more. But I think this was a big spring for Drew because he had to be more consistent. He has to take the next step. I think we're all in agreement with that. Do you have a case for any of the other guys?
No, I mean, I think it's Drew, maybe even for a different reason. Last spring game, I don't feel like he was as much under a microscope as he will be this time. Mm-hmm. Fair or unfair, I feel like that's the reality of this offseason. You know, last year, it felt as though it was just excitement surrounding Drew. It was, this is the five-star guy, finally. Sean is gone. It's now Drew. You know, I'm gonna twist whatever I need to be excited about, you know, this young kid stepping into the starting role. And now, you know, the fickle nature of modern college football is to blame to some degree, but you know, there's a year of Drew on tape now as the starter. And some people are happy with it. Some people aren't, but regardless, this is now a spring game to sort of gauge his development, I feel, for some people. And, you know, whether that's fair or unfair, I'm not one to say, but he will have to react to a different sort of pressure than he had to in the past. And I think that's big in and of itself, regardless of having to deal with a new offensive coordinator.
Receiver, who's the biggest spring here for the receivers? I'm still unsure on this, and I'm thinking.
This could really go any number of ways. I think my answer is different than maybe what I'm most interested in. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest spring is for Trey Wallace. And the reason I'm going to say that is his health was so inconsistent last season. And, you know, we mentioned a couple times that we felt as though Trey was the best opportunity for them to have a true number two in that room, which they were missing kind of all season, frankly. I mean, you know, Drew was able to go to the tight ends a lot, but outside of Keandre, there wasn't a lot of support in the receiver room. And for me, I kind of want to see, and I think the coaches want to evaluate, I think it's part of why you bring new guys in, such as Julian Fleming. You know, I think they want to see where is Trey at? After a shaky season last year, has he bounced back? In what capacity has he bounced back? And, you know, there was a lot of talk about his chemistry with Drew going into last season and even early last season. Does that still exist? Does he have a sort of advantage over the other receivers when it comes to chemistry? Or is that sort of flitted away? You know, is this the time for somebody else to step up at the number two?
Yeah, I like that answer. I think Keandre is a, you know, I want to say Keandre, but I could see Keandre just being there because he's more talented than anybody else in the room. I could see him being there in the fall and whether or not he's taken steps to improve his consistency or whatever. Yeah, I don't really have another great. I get Malik McLean, I think, could carve out a role here, a guy like that. But yeah, I maybe one of the younger guys comes in and does something, but I think that, yeah, to me it comes down to Trey Wallace and Lambert Smith. I mean, because look, we can look at McLean, we can look at Mega, and whatever they give the receiving core in the fall is extra to me. And you know, you're not counting on them to be stars, but if they give you something great that makes you better, they need Trey Wallace and Keandre to be stars. They just do. Running back, I'm going to give you the homer answer and say London Montgomery. I want to see what he's got. I think it's a big spring for him because he's got to show that year puts him at least an equal footing with the new guys coming in, you know, with Quentin Martin and Cam Wallace, I guess, you know, who's had the year too. So I think it's a huge spring for maybe a bigger spring than for anybody else who's, I guess, not in the starter or backup conversation. You know, I think London Montgomery is this is huge for him. This game, huge.
Well, and to take the flip side of that, I think my answer is maybe boiled down to that third running back spot.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Cam Wallace has had that extra year and he's put on weight and they've talked about him. You know, this could be his chance to establish himself as the number three running back. I mean, there's still ample amount of time for things to change before the season. But like you said, that race for the number three, we've seen you know, and maybe Code Will Nick is different, but I can't imagine that's the case in this conversation. We've seen James likes to have a third running back option there, whether it was Devin Ford before he left or Kevon Lee when Nick and Catron were building, and even bringing in Trey Potts last year. They like to have that third option for whatever reason. And this is the first year in a couple years that they don't really have a veteran option for the number three guy. And I really do think, because frankly, Nick and Catron are the veterans in the room now.
Yeah.
It still feels like
now
they're young.
Officially, they officially are the veteran guys.
They're tenured. So this is now an opportunity for a young guy to establish themselves as, you know, I'm going to be the running back when these two guys inevitably leave for the NFL. You know, maybe it's a guy who's not in the program yet, but right now it's a race between, you know, a lot of those freshmen, redshirt freshmen.
Defensive lineman, anybody there you think this is especially huge spring for?
I don't know. I mean, probably a stupid answer is Abdul, just to see what he does with the position switch. But he's probably the best athlete on the defense. So I don't know anybody who's concerned about that. In maybe Smith Vilbert, honestly, he flashed in that Outback Bowl years ago, really hasn't done anything since. I mean, I don't know. I'm interested to see he kind of feels done to me. Frankly, it feels like his time has been passed by, but you know, who knows? I mean, I guess you can fight your way into a rotational role. It's hard to call him a veteran. I think he's a redshirt senior.
We have like 4 minutes left in this segment, and we're probably going to use the next 4 minutes on Smith Vilbert here, because I think it's hysterical. and hysterical is not the word, but I think it's so funny that in the day and age of the transfer portal, and you know, everybody coming and going at whatever rate, going for the, you know, for two more dollars from one program to another, whatever the situation is, that we're still in a day and age where we're talking about the 2022 Outback Bowl, 2023 Outback Bowl, and what Smith Vilbert did in that game, and he's still here and hasn't played since. It hasn't played significantly since. It's fascinating to me that the path that Smith Vilbert's been on, because he's still around. There hasn't been a day that's gone by in the last year and a half or two, you know, whatever, where I would have been surprised that if I woke up and found out Smith Vilbert was in the portal, but he's still there and he's still sticking it out. And I think there's something to say about that. And he's obviously a very good player. He dominated a bowl game, that they lost. And if he didn't play as well, they had the lead at halftime in that game, I believe, but it's because of how he played. I think there's some value there. There's definitely upside, and whatever the issues have been with him, that haven't come out publicly or whatever, if he gets out there on the field and gets everything organized, you know, and you're looking at the rotation here with Denai Dennis Sutton and Zariah Fisher and Abdul, and you're throwing Smith Vilbert in there potentially, that's as good a rotation as you could have from a physical standpoint, from an ability standpoint. I don't think he's a throwaway in this. And you're right, he feels done, but he's still there. Like, how what's going on? I would love to know this story in full, to, you know, an on the record story that we could talk about here in full, what's going on. But I think he's, you know, I think he's a fascinating player to watch this spring.
It's commendable, like you said, that he stuck it out. And I do think that actually does matter for a coaching staff. Nobody involved in this program is stupid.
No.
You know, the reality is Smith could have left after that Outback Bowl. He could have left after he got injured. He could have left, you know, at any point, and he's stuck it out for, you know, his fifth or sixth season or whatever it's going to be. And maybe welcomes the challenge of the new guys coming in. You know, maybe he doesn't like his options in the portal. I don't know. But I do think, without blowing it up to be more than it is, you know, I do think there's a character thing there. That's impressive to me. There's frankly no reason that I don't think anybody would have blamed him if he left. But he wants to make it work at Penn State, and I don't know. Maybe he will. Like you said, in a rotational setting, you don't have to be the one guy.
Yeah, and it's interesting. A new defensive coordinator, kind of a new set of eyes. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, maybe there's something there that Tom Allen could find and relate to and bring out of him, because I mean, you can't play better than he played in the first half of the Outback Bowl. You can't. He was dominant. He just had an incredible half of football that, and I don't know if he's played a full half of football since. It's fascinating. Sam will be back in a couple of seconds here to talk about the end of the all James Franklin team, and this will be interesting. The kickers, punters, and wild cards coming up. Sam, we've reached the finish line. It's been a long process, months long here. Survived the 3 week break that came out of nowhere. We're at the conclusion of the all James Franklin team here in the Penn Stated podcast. Feels good to be at the finish line here as we get to spring practice.
It does. It's fun to see it all put together, because just the diversity of, James has only been there for a decade, but just the diversity of the players on the first and second team from, there's guys from 2014, 2015, and there's guys who are still on the team now. It's cool to see them all put together, and I largely feel pretty good about, what we've picked.
Do you want to start with punters or kickers here? And I apologize. I think I distracted you. I dropped my notes and they have disappeared into thin air. They're not even in the room anymore. They just kind of fell off the table here. But do you want to start with punters or kickers?
Ooh, let's do kickers. Let's do
Okay.
kickers.
Okay. Now, let me see if I could find my notes real quick.
I'm amazed I haven't lost my notes, because I use the smallest sticky notes I possibly could to write these notes on. I don't have a
You
ruler in
know,
here, but
I
these
found
are
them.
tiny.
Yeah, I found them underneath the. There's a. I mean, you could see it, but nobody else can. There's a like a china cabinet behind me where I keep all my barware that I don't use. It's just nice barware, and it fell under there. So, we kickers. You said.
Yeah, let's do kickers
You want
first.
first pick at kickers or first pick at punters?
I'll take first pick at punters.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say something when we start the punters that probably will shock you. All right, kickers. And this sucks for me, because I real there's one of these guys who I really enjoyed working with, and I would love to put him on the team. And I don't know if I have a real case, because he was only there for a year. I'm not going to do it. And this is going to be a shocking maneuver on my part, and because he had so many ups and downs. Man, this is a tough one too. I'm gonna go with Jake Pinniger.
Gotcha.
Pinniger had, I think he finished strong. Now, he lost his job as a junior, quote unquote, as second to last year. I think he was probably a senior that year. He lost the job. One of those guys you were talking earlier about, Smith Vilbert. He stuck it out, and I thought he kicked really well as a senior 2 years ago. And not only on field goals, but on kickoffs. I thought he really developed into an outstanding kicker for Penn State, and he was there forever. Pinniger's numbers overall, I think they're probably, I don't know that you can argue that they're the best numbers. I think he's a, when you look at him through his career, I'll call him up here in a sec. I think the one knock on him that I have is he missed too many extra points. Ironically, he missed 7 extra points in his career, but he hit 195 out of 202. You know, 49 of 67 field goals is not too shabby. He had a good leg. He was able to hit. He had a couple of 50 yarders his last year. I just kind of thought that the way he was able to go about his job. I think he had certainly some rough stretches, but I kind of think what. With the options that we had and the length of time that they played, I'm most comfortable giving the honor of the first team kicker to Pinniger. And I think this is one where I don't know if you would have done that.
I don't think I would have, but
Yeah.
I don't necessarily. I think Penninger got more flack than maybe he deserved. I can't remember if I told the story or not, but I'm going to again anyway, I guess. But it's like I spoke to him during that Rose Bowl season, midway through the year. I liked talking to the specialists just because, they don't get talked to as much,
And
and
they
as a
love it.
result,
They love to get talked to.
exactly, as a result, it's rare that you speak with them. I mean, they're not made available super often. But when you're over there, you can, I had a 10-minute conversation with just me and Penninger for a little bit. And I asked him about him losing his job, that, whatever year that was for him.
21.
And he said he actually didn't mind it because, I mean, the competitive side of him did, but it allowed him to focus on sort of rebuilding his confidence and stuff like that. I mean, and during that Rose Bowl season, he got hot when they needed it. He had a couple misses in noticeable spots, but there were a couple months where he didn't miss a kick. And I don't know that that was his reputation among, the fans. He sort of had the reputation for being way more flaky than he actually was. Yeah, I don't know. I probably wouldn't have picked him number one, but I'm certainly not as mad as maybe some people will be at hearing
Here,
that.
here's the thing about him from his sophomore year on, and there's 4 years involved there. He was 33 for 43 on field goals. I think that's pretty good. And look, there's a kicker I like better, but I don't think I can justify it with the numbers, the length of time. I mean, it is an all James Franklin team, and he was on the team for half of the seasons that James Franklin coached. I think, if he's good enough for, to be the first team kicker for most of Franklin's tenure, then I think he's good enough to be the first teamer. And I certainly I like the way he finished. I put a big premium on finishing strong, and he did a great job as the kicker in 2022, and under some duress, I thought he could have lost that job, but he didn't. He came in and grabbed a hold of it, and then on the kickoffs was really great. And I think almost as much as field goals, kickoffs are huge, huge for a college kicker. I think that's to me a difference maker for him.
You brought up how players finish, and you put a premium on that. I don't think that's a bad thing at all because, this isn't the NFL, and we talked about this in the season with other players, but with the instant gratification style of just culture in general right now, but also in the transfer portal and NIL and everything like that, you're expecting guys to come in and be immediately at an NFL level as a freshman. And that hasn't been the way college sports have worked for, forever. That's never been the majority of college football players. So if you can hit your stride at the end of your college career, that's really what college sports have been about for as long as they've been around, so I think it really says more about who you are as a player, for you to perform at the end of your career than it does to struggle early.
He showed up as an 18-year-old, left as a 23-year-old. I mean, obviously he should be a bigger, stronger, better player, different kind of person than he was when he showed up, and when he leaves in 5 years. So and he was, and a couple of guys on this list were, and I'm really anxious to see if you're going to put my guy on here, because this is a rare situation where I might consider a kicker on the wild card team if you don't pick who I'm thinking of. Because I like him that much. I just like him as a person. Everything I learned about kicking, I learned from this guy.
I could go a number of different ways, which is weird because I don't remember the last time that James has come into a spring press conference or an early season press conference and said comfortably, like, we have our starting kicker. I mean, he just said it again a couple days ago that they're not ready to pick one. So it's funny that I have so many potential options, but I think I'm going to go with Tyler Davis as my pick. And the reason is, so I considered Sam Ficken, but he really only had 1 year under Franklin.
Yeah, you can't.
And when
yeah.
you compare the stats, you know, Davis just has the jump on him. But Davis didn't miss an extra point in his career. He kicked from 2015, 2016, 2017. Didn't miss an extra point. It was 149 of 149. And I know extra points are the gimmies, but they're not. You still have to do them. We used to talk about all the time back in my college apartment. I never understand why players get penalized for doing the things they're supposed to do, because you still have to do them. I'm you know, a quarterback throws a check down or a slant. They have to do it. They have to find that read and hit it. If you're a kicker, you got to hit the extra points. And he did. He did. His field goal percentage dipped towards the end of his career. I know we just had this big conversation about hitting your
stride.
Which
is why he wasn't the first team pick. Yeah.
But, you know, he was 7 of 7 as a sophomore, as a field goal kicker. 22 of 24 in 2016, and then he drops to 9 of 17 in 2017. But you know, for me, Sam Ficken had 1 year. He kicked. He was also perfect from extra point that season, 28 of 28, and he was 24 of 29 as a field goal kicker. But, you know, just for me, the long tenure of Tyler Davis pushes him over the edge. I feel like it's, if you're going to have one season compared to somebody's three, it's got to be an outstanding season. And, you know, it's just, to me, it wasn't close when it comes to those 3 years against his one.
Yeah. And I regretfully agree with that. And it, for me, it came down to Pinniger and Tyler Davis, because And I didn't pick Tyler Davis because he didn't finish strong. As I said, I mean, he was 9 of 17 as a senior. I mean, that's not a, I mean, he was great as a junior, but Pinniger was better. But I will say this about Ficken, it almost got him the first team nod on this team. Until I met Jair Brown. I mean, not even met him, but until I saw him at Penn State, because I had met him obviously years before he got to Penn State. But Ficken was the Penn State player I respected most that I've ever covered, because of what he went through in the 2012 season at the, you know, with the, yeah, missing the kicks at Virginia, the death threats, some of the stuff that he had to endure, he lost the game, he lost them that game, and to recover and become the kind of kicker he was and to kick in the NFL for as long as he did.
Yeah,
I really respect that. And he had his best season as a senior, 83% field goal percentage that year. And he was a good kickoff guy. He's a good, solid kicker and a really great person. But and he was. But when you said, you know, you talked to Pinniger, and, you know, those kickers love to talk. I mean, Ficken would sit there in that room and just look around for anybody willing. So I would always go over and he would get up out of the chair and show me, like, you know, the techniques for kicking and, you know, what he means from one thing to the next. Ficken was one of my two favorite Penn State players ever. And I'm not saying that lightly. He is a great, great guy. And I think he was a credit to the special teams unit for a long time. But he just had 1 year for Franklin, and it was a good year, but it wasn't better than Davis's one good year. And it wasn't necessarily better than any of Pinniger's good years. So we'll move on to punter, and you wanted the first pick here. And I'm going to say,
yeah,
this.
I'll take first pick.
I'm going to say this. I think of all the positions, this was the most hotly contested for number one.
I don't disagree. It's actually, I'm thinking about it right now, I don't know if there's one that's harder to pick.
There wasn't for me. I was hoping you wanted.
Yeah, I'm looking at the list right now, and especially for the first pick, there might have been some struggles with the second first teamer at some of these positions, but there's pretty clearly usually a first pick at these positions. And I don't know about this one.
Yeah, we didn't. I mean, Miles Sanders is a certain first team pick here, but we weren't seriously debating him over Saquon or stuff like that. This is a legitimate. You have two superstars. Two superstar punters. You don't have a third. What do you do? Someone's got to be on the first team. And it's Sam's job to pick that player.
And I felt like I should, because during that Rose Bowl season, I was our resident Clifford apologist, and I was our resident Barney Amore beat writer, was
Somebody had to do that job.
what they called me. I was very interested. You ever see him carry that pillow in and out of the games? That was something I spent all year trying to. Wasn't hard to figure out. They just never made him available. But I back to the task at hand. I think I'm going to go with Jordan Stout as my number one.
I think we would have gone two
And
different ways.
here's why. And maybe this is, it's probably unfair, but it's what I did. The reason I'll give Jordan Stout the edge is, while I guess I won't say my other guy's name, even though it's fairly obvious where you'll go for the second teamer. But although he may not have been technically more proficient than who I believe you're going to take as the second teamer, I just think Stout added more at other, like, you can make the argument that Stout is a wild card player.
Yeah, you could.
If he wasn't so obviously one of the top two punters in Franklin's tenure, I would have made a strong case for putting him as a wild card, because he was also a pretty decent kicker. And with the kickoffs, I think during the Rose Bowl season, he, I don't have the stats in front of me for this, but it was multiple weeks into the season before he had a non-touchback kickoff. Maybe it's unfair to weigh kicking as well as when I pick a punter, but I had to find out some way to make this decision. And I mean, Stout was a great punter. It's really amazing. Penn State gets the reputation for being linebacker U, but you could make a strong case for punter U, which I don't know if I've ever heard before, but it's shocking how many good ones they've had.
They've had a million. And look, I think this is one of those situations where if we're building a real team, I might take Stout first because of the kickoffs. And I just went on this rant about how important kickoffs are. And Stout was the best kickoff man I've ever seen in college football. He was so consistent with it. There was no kickoff return. And to be able to take some of the Big Ten's kickoff returners out of games, Stout was a weapon. And you look at it, like, the last couple of years, I thought they did okay last year on kickoffs. Wosu is a good kickoff guy. The year before, Pinniger was a good kickoff guy. And you look at the percentages, they're not even within 15, 20% of what Stout was as a kickoff guy on touchbacks. So I think, from a versatility standpoint, you put Stout in there as if you're picking one guy to punt. And we wouldn't pick two punters on a real team, but we have to pick two punters here, and Blake Gillikin is obviously the other punter here that we debated, but he was so steady for 4 years, and he was on the three of the best teams you've ever seen at Penn State. I mean, really, I mean, the 16 team, the 8, the 17 team, and the 19 team were so good, and he was, he's a 43-yard average in his career. 42.8 as a freshman, 43.2 as a sophomore, 44 as a junior, 42.2 as a senior. He didn't finish as strong as he could have, but man, is he a good punter? He's a really good NFL punter. I mean, really, really good NFL punter. So, yeah, I thought Gillikin, to me, would have been my number one guy, just because I look at him as a true punter. But you made a great point. Stout is the wild card guy. He might be. If he didn't get picked here by some complete failure on the part of us, I think you would have to put him. He would have been my number one wild card guy because he's so useful. I mean, and look, and if he completed the pass on that trick play that one game that they called it, I think, was that against Ohio State? Yeah, he might be an even stronger wild card guy. But yeah, I'm not going to sit here and argue Stout as number one. He had a bigger career average. I think he was a 44 average, and Gillikin was a 43, but Stout really had 2 years, and 1 year, the 1 year he averaged 46 yards a punt, and he was able to place it. He was just a really good punter. But Gillikin, I thought, all around was a was a better all-around pure punter. For punters, they're two very different players, right? I mean,
yeah,
you can't look at one of them and say, oh, nobody looked at Jordan Stout and said, oh, he reminds me a lot of Gilligan. That never happened. There was nobody like Jordan Stout. And you know, you see him with the Ravens. That's a very good special teams organization, obviously, with John Harbaugh as a special teams coach. So they know what they're doing. And Stout's been a really good NFL player with the Ravens as well.
Well, and they put a premium on drafting him, too.
I mean, for
a special teams organization like the Ravens to go up and draft him in the fourth round is, you know, crazy for a punter. I mean, I certainly wasn't expecting it, but it makes sense given the consistency he brings to the position.
Was he the number one punter taken that year? I know that was the year that other kid came out and was.
Yeah, because it was controversial that Stout went before him. But...
Yeah. And now not so much anymore.
Yeah.
But I forget what the kid's name was. He didn't, you know, there was, he had some off the field concerns that there were some issues with him, but yeah, I think everybody thought that kid was going to be the number one punter taken. And then the Ravens took Stout and it's turned out to be a good smart move by them because, you know, and if they didn't have the best kicker in the world on their team too, I'm sure Stout could handle some of the longer field goals in the NFL. Cause that's another thing he gave you a kicker. Stout gave you a kicker. So as a player, you take Stout ahead of Gilligan. As a pure punter, I think I might have leaned Gilligan, but as long as they're both on
fair.
The team. Yeah. As long as they're both on the team, I think we did justice for the all James Franklin punting unit. that's probably his strongest position.
Which is wild. It wasn't until you said that I realized that. But that, I mean, really is true.
Yeah. All right. Wild card picks. And I think this is a We're each going to take two players here who didn't make the team on the first or second or, you know, the rare positions where we had the third team. We're just going to pick our guys here who didn't make it, probably that we think should have. And Sam, I'll let you go first because I have so many players on this list. I think
me too.
Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first? Doesn't matter. I don't think you're going to take somebody that I have on the list.
I don't think so either. I think our lists are probably different because I can just go first for the first one.
Go for it.
I'll put Nick Singleton on this.
Nick. Nick makes the team.
Yeah. I think you have to. You know, he actually was one of the last people that made this list for me because when I was thinking wild cards, I was thinking, you know, maybe some unsung guys. You know, I kind of think that's what this position is for. But in a way, you know, Nick didn't make it for the running backs for us. And that was my fault. I think
you
I took
Catron
over Nick.
I would have taken Nick over Catron, yeah.
But I do think that, you know, Nick is a weapon. You know, they'll use him in the return game. He's obviously a strong running back. I kind of think you're going to see him used more as a you know, maybe as a pass catcher to some degree this season. We'll see. He's a guy that if you get the ball in his hands, he's a little bit of a joker. It's a little bit Saquon-like. It's a cliche comparison at this point. And I mean, he honestly hasn't earned the pedigree that Saquon has earned. But, you know, one, Nick is still young. And two, you know, I really do think that joker style description fits him. You know, it doesn't matter how he gets the ball in his hands, but if the ball is in his hands, you know, an opposing team is at risk of an 80-yard touchdown.
I think you could go two ways with the wild card too. You know, you could pick a player who should have been on the team or at a position that was particularly loaded and just add him on that way. And I think that's kind of what you were doing there. But I thought Nick was one of the top four, but it's a preference thing. Do you like Nick better? Or do you like Catron better? And it's the same thing. You don't look at Nick and think, well, he reminds me of Catron, but I think they're more similar than people would give them credit for. So I think that was kind of a toss up and we're rectifying the toss up nature of that. My first pick, and then we've talked, this is not a, nobody's going to be surprised I'm putting this guy on the team because we've talked so much about him. He almost made the team. He really did. and out of nowhere, because I don't think the numbers back it up in any regard, but I'm taking Lamont Wade. I can't see a team without Lamont Wade on it.
Oh my goodness, that was my other wild card. I'm so serious.
Wait, I mean, this is a guy. I mean, if you look at him from a pure recruiting perspective, and this is why I don't want to say I don't pay attention to the recruiting sites. Obviously, I do, but I take them all with a grain of salt. They had him as a five-star cornerback, and I think he was neither a five-star player or a cornerback. He was a good, solid three-star safety, but that's what he was. He was a good, solid player who forced a million fumbles and who did a lot of crazy stuff. And the big moments, you didn't worry about Lamont Wade. Against Ohio State, he was going to show up and he was going to play, and he could play with those guys. He's one of those guys who, kind of like Hardy did last year, he showed up and was a good kick returner at the end of his career, a really good kick returner at the end of his career. So I'm gonna put Wade on the team because I think there's, again, you go two ways with this. One is the guy who should have made it and didn't because there just wasn't enough spots, and two, the guy who's your favorite player who you enjoyed watching the most, and you have to put him on the team.
I wish I had picked Lamont first for those reasons. I mean, like you said, I compared Nick Singleton to a Joker. I'll compare Lamont Wade to, I mean, again, it's a cliche comparison, but I'll compare him to a Swiss Army knife in some respect, because he may not have been the biggest knife. He wasn't a serrated hunting knife, but he played safety. He played slot corner occasionally. He was a kick returner, and he did all of those things successfully. As you said, he stepped up in ways that you have to, and that's the best way to do it. He was a wild card.
Yeah, and I think that's what he I think that's his position, so he gets on there as my wild card. And I'll let you go third. I feel bad for taking your guy here.
No, I have a whole list, and honestly there's a couple guys on here that I'll be disappointed don't make the list, because I either they're not on your list or I doubt you're going to pick them. I think I'm gonna go with Jesse Luketta as my third wild card. And again, a little bit to the point of Lamont Wade, the numbers maybe don't bear it out as well as some of the other guys on my list. But the way that I thought Luketta was a successful linebacker, and then they move him to the defensive line, and I frankly thought, well, do I want to put myself out there like that? Regardless, I think he played well in the defensive line as well. I think they were able to move him around, and he wasn't the, Abdul is an athletic archetype. He's a guy where you just want him on the field, and is he a linebacker? Is he a defensive end? I don't know. Go get the quarterback. I don't know that Luketta was that type of player. That was a real position change to me. And I thought he succeeded in doing so. And you could argue his best season came during that disappointing Outback Bowl season when Luketta was on the defensive line. Again, the stats maybe don't bear it out, but I just thought that, one, there's to me value in being able to change positions as dramatically as he did. And if you look at the NFL, there's a reason he's carved a career out as a special teamer. I think the traits rose to the top with him.
Look, if we're putting a team together, you want Jesse Luketta on it because you could throw Jesse Luketta at edge or defensive end or whatever you want to call it, and he's going to do okay. Or, and the next week your middle linebacker gets hurt, you want to throw Jesse Luketta at middle linebacker, he's going to be pretty good at that. You could put him in the box, you could put him outside, you could do whatever you want with him. And he's a good character guy, captain type. He's not going to hurt you. Yeah, I like Luketta as a wild card. I'm not gonna. He's not on my list. When we were discussing linebackers, yeah, I had him there. He was somebody I was considering. But yeah, I kind of like it. So I'll add the last guy here. And we only did two tight ends, right? Yeah. Because you took two. We took two defensive players and an offensive player. I'm going back to the offense. I'm gonna pick Brenton Strange because I think. I want the best blocking tight end on the team. So I'm gonna I'm I, and I think he was he's worth being on the team. And we could have gone Theo. I think that's the underserved position on the all James Franklin team, the way we've done it. So I'm gonna put Brenton Strange on there. I know how many teams were at that pro day just watching him, just loved watching him. And he's been a good NFL player. He was a really good, solid, understated Penn State tight end. He didn't have the pedigree that Theo has, or that Luke Reynolds even has, or that Freiermuth had, or that Mike Gesicki had. But he came in and he played the position very well. Great blocker, just an outstanding blocker. And he wasn't guaranteed anything. He was a three-star guy who came in and really worked his butt off and became a player. So I'm going to put Strange on the team after. And I do want to go over some of the other guys we have on the list. I want to leave a little bit of time for that because we have about 3 minutes here. But your thoughts on Brenton Strange being on this? Because I don't see another position on offense since you took Singleton, where there's a guy I think that's screaming to be on the team. But I think Strange would have been the best player not on the team.
I absolutely agree. And like you said, not just because he's a receiver, but because he fits the wild card name a little bit too.
Who else is on your list? Who are you pained that didn't make the cut?
You know, to some degree, I was disappointed Daquan Hardy didn't make it.
Yeah, I really
reasons similar to Lamont.
He would have been on the team.
I actually think he's a better corner, obviously, than Lamont Wade was. And then, as you said, with the kick returning, you know, it sort of flashed and you watch and go, where, why wasn't he on the field more?
Yes.
Chris Stoll is maybe a weird one at long snapper.
Oh, we should have put long snappers on the team. You could put Stoll and Vasey out there.
Right. And I just think Stoll was so good for so long that I almost put him there. But, you know, there are a couple guys I wanted on there as wild cards differently. You know, maybe Adam DeLuca after this season, I'd feel stronger about. But, you know, again, a wild card style. I mean, he wears the number zero. It's part of the allure behind that number is, you know, his hard work and just his versatility.
Yeah, I had Robert Windsor on the list. His numbers weren't what the guys before him were, and they were better than the guys who've come after him. But those guys are kind of a different kind of defensive tackle. You know, the Mustafers and players like that. But I really liked Robert Windsor. He was you look at his career. He had 20 tackles for loss or something like that. 13 sacks. That's nothing to sneeze at. 3 fumble recoveries. Always around the ball. Forced 2 fumbles. I just kind of liked Windsor, but I thought we had a good group of defensive tackles there. So Shaka Tony, I loved. He was another grit, as steady as it got. And when he got on a roll, you couldn't stop. Nobody could block him. Yeah, he dominated the game at Indiana. Now, if we're talking, you know, if we're saying, hey, he dominated the game at Michigan, I'd probably put him on. Sam, thanks so much for your time and for your participation here. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you guys next week.